Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by T.J. Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call T.J.'s team today to see why they're referred to so often. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. Looking ahead to Tennessee's trip to the Swamp coming up on Saturday night. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. How y'all doing?
Awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Adam, the passing game for Tennessee through the first 2 weeks, you know, obviously you played Virginia and Austin Peay, so not necessarily the greatest quality of opponent. But personally, I've watched the passing game. I haven't seen much, and I don't know how much of that is they're holding back plays. I don't know how much of that is lack of execution between Milton and his receivers. But it's basically been a lot of bubble screens through the first 2 weeks, and that's about it in the passing game. How concerning is that to you? What have you thought about Tennessee's passing attack thus far?
Yeah, I think the problems are more execution. Now, I don't doubt there's some route combination or something that they've held back. But I have gotten this question a lot over the last week that, you know, well, they went really vanilla throwing bubble screens. Well, let's first off, Josh Heupel's offense is not really there's not flavors to his offense. His offense isn't based on you know, strange personnel groupings or, you know, creative plays or anything like that. And that's not a knock on the offense. It's a great offense, but it's more about principles. You spread them out, that usually exposes the middle of the field, then you throw it there or you run it there. If they don't spread out, then you start to hit the outside and with go routes. And there's not a way to do that in a vanilla way. If you look early in that game, Austin Peay dropped 8 in the coverage. They left open the middle of the field, but both throws were misfires by Joe Milton. In the second and third drives, the routes were there, they were dropped. If there was a thought of them going sort of vanilla, it would have been the second half. I think UT thought they'd be up, you know, 40 points at the half, and then they could sort of dumb things down if they needed to in the second half, but that didn't happen. I mean, the fact that they went with a lot of bubble screens to me was more of, hate to say survival mode, but things weren't working downfield. They weren't even open downfield, really, which maybe is a little bit of a concern. They weren't executing things in the middle of the field, so they sort of had to go to that just to drive the ball. I think the offense will be better in this game. I think that was sort of a wake-up call to the offense. But, I mean, a lot of that was pitch and catch. If you're missing throws or if you're not catching throws, that's not play calls. It's just a poor execution.
Yeah, that's well said. We were talking about that yesterday. It's kind of like Kirby Smart explained the offense. It's kind of like going against the modern option, right? I mean, there's different plays, of course, but – like it's principles, and it's like, you know, they're forcing you to make the choice of the defense. They do a lot of the same stuff, and it's either they do it well or they don't, or you defend it well or don't. So to your point, Adam, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's basically just misfiring. You know, Joe Milton too high and too hard on some of those throws, some drops in there. Like, where do you sense the confidence level is with Milton from the coaching staff? I mean, take the fan base out of it, because of course people were going to scream Nico the first incompletion this year. But do you feel like Joe Milton, like, is there a loss of confidence? Do you feel, and do you feel this is an important game for him to kind of solidify himself, or is that overreacting?
Yeah, I don't think it's overreacting. I think some of those things are on the table for this game. I wrote a story yesterday that about the trust is sort of on the line in this game, and that's not just that's not just the coaches to Joe Milton. I think that's Joe Milton to the wide receivers. I think that's Josh Heupel, the play caller, to his offensive line. You know, if you look at last year's offense, if they want to take a deep shot, they knew that offensive line would hold up. Hendon Hooker, if he knew, for example, at the Pitt game last year when he targeted Cedric Tillman like 24 times, he knew it's third down, I'm going to Cedric Tillman, he's catching the ball. I don't think Joe Milton has that guy right now. Brew McCoy probably has the best chance to be that guy, but it's not there yet. Josh Heupel knew, and Joe Milton knew, if the middle of the field was exposed, there's going to be some type of seam route there. They're going to hit it, and it's going to go for a big play. That was the story of the Alabama game with Jalin Hyatt. Those things are uncertain right now. They didn't seem uncertain in preseason practice. They seem uncertain after that Austin Peay game. So I think this game will sort of dictate a lot of that. If any of those guys trust 100% what any of the others can do. And I mean, some of this will have to do with Florida too. You know, I'm curious to see what Billy Napier does, or what his staff does on defense. Austin Peay had a great game plan and a great approach, and it maybe exposed some things in Tennessee's timing. Some of that goes to the fact that Cooper Mays was out at center. Some of that goes to new personnel over there. But, you know, if you look in pre-snap through a lot of through especially the early parts of that game, Austin Peay would look like they were in whatever their base was, and then they would start to bring guys up in the box. They would load the box. Tennessee would pause for a second. Milton would pause for a second, look to the sideline. But then at the snap, they would drop eight into coverage. And it seemed like usually in this tempo offense, we're used to Tennessee dictating things. They're always a step ahead of the defense. Early in that game, Austin Peay's defense was dictating things. And I'll be curious to see how Florida approaches that, because we're two games in now, and both defenses they face, Virginia and Austin Peay, basically have said, we're not going to let Joe Milton throw over the top. Everything's going to be underneath, and we don't think you can hurt us well enough underneath.
Well, Adam, to that point, one thing they've done really well through two games, albeit, you know, obviously with a talent advantage, has been run the football, and they've run all over Virginia and Austin Peay. How much of a part of the game plan, how much of Tennessee's success to you depends on how well they do that on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I'd wondered early in the, you know, before the season, if they would have a 1,000-yard rusher. I'm convinced they're going to now, because I think Jalin Wright's going to, he's going to keep doing this even in SEC play. They can run with him. I think maybe some of this first two games was to test out the pass game and to see how good they could be at it, how close they could be of what they were the last 2 years. And that's, you know, again, the jury's still out on that, but I think you're starting to see their identity is that you know, this offense is supposed to be run first anyway. It's got this, people have this idea that it's a passing offense, but you end up in the pass. You don't start there. The principles are to run the ball. And I think of what they've seen out of the first two games, they may be more often just to look to the run to win games. And maybe that means it's not as high scoring. Maybe that means that affects the tempo some, but you know, they're fine winning either way, but they certainly, I think, feel more confident in that. And again, some of that depends on whether Cooper Mays is playing, whether or not they can then slide Ollie Lane to left guard, and whether or not that would solidify that offensive line, which has been okay so far, but not to the level that they needed to be.
Meanwhile, I watch the defense play. I'm very impressed with the defense. I think that they're going to be improved against the better teams this year, but I don't know that for sure. What's your sense of the defense heading in this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense suffers from what we've seen the last 2 years. And, you know, and last year's defense suffered from what they did the year before. You know, people forget last year the defense was pretty good. I mean, it was top 30, I think, top 35 in the country in scoring. That was up from like 97 the year before. They were good against the run last year. They've been one of the better tackles for loss teams the last couple of years. But when we look at them of what they've done so far this year, they lead the country in sacks. They lead the country in tackles for loss. We're still like, is this a good defense, though? I'm not sure. You know, if this was flipped on the other side and the offense was leading the country in some categories, we would say, well, of course they're great and they're going to be great all year. But we're just not sure about this defense because of who they played but especially of that they, you know, haven't been great the last 2 years. So we're sort of waiting for them to prove themselves. And honestly, I am too. I think there's been some pass rush there. I think they've gotten to the backfield well, but it's been against two bad opponents. You know, Kamal Haddon had a pick last game. He also had some pass interferences last game because he wouldn't turn his head on coverage. When he did turn his head, he got the pick. So there's something. But he's I think he leads the country in passes defended right now. But is he?
People like throwing at him. They do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Yeah, that means he's being targeted. So we'll see against better teams. And Florida is not a great team. I feel like Tennessee's probably going to win a close one. I don't base that as much on the fact that I think Tennessee's going to fix all the problems. I base that as much on I think Florida is sort of a okay middle-of-the-pack SEC team, and so I think they're beatable.
Well, Adam, looking forward to the game coming up on Saturday. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest on Robbie and Rexha. We'll look ahead to Tennessee and Florida coming up next. How much is on the line for Joe Milton in this game? And Joe Rexha asked the question, do Tennessee fans really have anything to be worried about against the Florida Gators? We'll get into that next, too. This is Robbie and Rexha, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Sign up for Silly Underdog Picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can make your picks today at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app. Week 2 of the NFL this weekend, Week 3 of college football. Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexha. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel for being with us in the last segment. Primetime action for the Vols on Saturday night on the road at the Swamp, taking on the Florida Gators. Tennessee a 6.5-point favorite in this game. And lots of intrigue for the Vols in this game, Joe. We heard from Adam there. The passing game has not been great to this point. I was looking at it yesterday. Joe Milton is dead last in the SEC in terms of efficiency with quarterbacks for quarterback play through 2 weeks. Now, again, it's very small sample size at this point, but we'll see what that looks like moving forward. But he's got to be better. I mean, he's got to be better moving forward. The receivers have to be better. We've talked about this week. How much do you think is on the line for Milton specifically in this game Saturday night against Florida?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I do. And I don't know that it's, you know, play great or Nico's in. But, I mean, if he plays poorly in a loss, then I think anything's on the table at that point. And it's not even just about fans screaming about it. You know, I think that you're Tennessee, you have to look at that. Look, another thing with all of this that we haven't talked much about is they do have a new OC.
Yep.
And although this is Josh Heupel's baby and he's the play caller and all that stuff. Now Alex Golish called the plays last year. So I guess I shouldn't say Josh Heupel's the play caller. Maybe he isn't. Maybe it is Joey Halsley, but either way, whether you're calling the plays or not, you're the person who's with the quarterback. I mean, I know, like, Golish talked a lot about this last year, about, like, his meetings with Hendon Hooker and kind of like, okay, you like this one? What about this? You like this? Oh, no, can we get rid of that? No, speak up, Hendon. What do you like? What suits you?
Right.
Let's get in a game plan and plays that work. And obviously it worked awfully well. So right now, is Halsley not – you know, finding stuff that suits Milton. You know, I don't know, but something's funny to you.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay, this is something you can't say on the air.
Yes.
So, but Halsley, that's a big change. Golish is good. In fact, I actually don't know, but I wonder how Golish is doing. I'll have to look this up. How's he doing at South Florida?
Well, they're playing Alabama this weekend, so we'll see how that goes.
Hey, all right. Score a lot of points. That'd be a big win for him.
That would be.
So, you know, it's there's that. The OC change shouldn't just be dismissed or forgotten about. I mean, that is significant. And, look, Joe Milton, I mean, that last game, it's like early on, like Adam said, it's just a little bit high, maybe catchable, you know. I mean, I thought he made good decisions where he was going with the ball,
yep.
You know. I mean, you get guys open in the middle of the field, missed them, just put too much on it. And then he got hosed by his receivers a couple times, without question.
He did.
So, I mean, that's part of it. But the whole thing right now is very clunky, and they need a a boost of confidence and efficiency.
Well, what Adam said, though, after that, though, is kind of what I've been talking about all week and why I think it's been pretty concerning so far for Tennessee, and that is they went into basically survival mode offensively after that, running the ball, of course, but also in the passing game. I mean, it was bubble screens. That's all it was. And I don't know if that's just because that's what Austin Peay was giving them and that was the look that they have, or if they just didn't have trust and confidence to run over the middle of the field and do it that way, but it was concerning. Like I like the way Adam put it there. It was survival mode for Tennessee in the passing game. And you can't – they're not going to we talked about could they get to double-digit wins again? Could you get to a spot where you're following up a great year last year with another great year this year? You're not going to do that if you don't – if you can't execute better in the passing game and you don't have confidence to take more chances in the passing game that way. So, look, we talked about the players-only meeting yesterday, and we'll see what that looks like as they move forward here. But I think this is a huge game for Milton. You're on the road. I still think it's going to be a hostile environment that you're going into on Saturday. It's Tennessee, Florida. I know this is not a great Florida team. And I know that if you watch them play against Utah, they got a lot of problems. And Graham Mertz, I don't think he's very good. I think Tennessee's defense in this game has a chance to play really well and to look good and to create some turnovers and to do all those things. So this is going to be, I think, a good test for Tennessee's defense because they've looked great through 2 weeks. I'm not sure what all we've learned about them through 2 weeks, given the quality of opponent that they played. But this is a good test for them on the road against a team that has SEC-level talent. So we'll see what that looks like. But Joe Milton in this offense, I guess it's really, really important to me that they come out and play well. Because if you get at halftime and Milton's missing passes or the receivers and him aren't on the same page, to me, that's really concerning at this point in the season. I mean, we're 3 games in now. You got to find a way to figure that part of it out. And I don't expect Joe Milton to be perfect, right? One thing we talked about yesterday that I still question with myself, like how much I'm looking at this, like how much am I viewing this through what Hendon Hooker did at Tennessee? And that's the thing I think Tennessee fans are going to have to get out of their head because it's just not going to be that. I think that was pretty clear the first game against Virginia. He looked fine against Virginia. It's not going to be what Hendon Hooker was. So you have to know that going into it. But even having said that, he's got to be better and they've got to be better in the passing game than they've been through 2 weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I mean, you talk about survival mode. Think about like the opener, like Heupel's just fourth and whatever, sure, go, just going for it. You know, it's 6-3 against Austin Peay, and it's like, I don't know, it's like fourth and five or yep, whatever from their 20, and he kicks a field goal and tied. I'm like, man, that is a big vote of no confidence in the offense. All of a sudden, a week after, yep, Virginia, let it rip, let's go. So, I mean, even he's looking at things and saying, man, you know, Heupel is, I guess like a lot of coaches, but I think even more than most, very averse to ever criticizing a player.
Yep.
Like he'll say, we need to be better in this area or that area, but, I mean, he's even – said, you know, like Joe's got to play better. I mean, he said that a few times after the game, and then since then this week too. So it's very out of sync. Third downs again, it's been very bad with Joe Milton at quarterback. Starting with the Vanderbilt game last year when he took over as starter, third down efficiency has been terrible, and so. It is. I get the concern. I do, and I'm interested. I think that it's there for him, and I think he's absolutely good enough to light Florida up. And if he does, then I think you kind of have a clean slate and you move forward,
yep,
and you're going to have a chance to do a lot of things you want to do. But if it goes bad Saturday, then it is going to be very interesting to see how Heupel reacts to that.
I will say, you know, we talked so much about the passing game this week and how important it is for them to get that part of it fixed, which – I think it's going to be a big part of the game Saturday. I am interested to see how well Tennessee can run the ball in this game because they've looked great on the ground through 3 games. Jalen Wright, I think, is clearly their number one back. But even the other two guys, Jabari Small has proven, you know, he's a good runner at the SEC level. I've been impressed by what I've seen from Sampson so far. So I think they've got 3 good backs led by Jalen Wright, and they've run for, you know, they're running for 250 yards a game right now. So to me, that's the plan on Saturday is – punch Florida in the mouth and run the ball,
yeah,
and then figure out the passing game as you go.
And they ran for 230 on him last year. I mean, and the thing about Wright is, you know, just a little bit of a light box, and it's just so, I mean, it's so hard as a defense to not have a little bit of a light box against Tennessee.
Yep.
He's so powerful that it's just, man, you know, you have to be totally dominant as a defensive front against an offensive line to stop it. So, I think it'll be a heavy dose of that. And I'm very interested to see what Florida does, because teams have been taking away the deep part of the field. Do you get a little more aggressive to try to stop the run and say, let's see if this guy can actually hit some of these? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you do, you risk letting him get his confidence back and just getting blown out. But it's going to be very interesting to see how Florida defends them.
So one question I do have for Tennessee fans, and I think you've brought this up too, but, you know, Devin on the text line says, we find ways to lose in the swamp. A lot of times it's with a better team. Nate says, as a Vols fan, I'm very concerned. The history of the Vols in the swamp and the noise the fans can create for mistakes is very concerning. Is there anything about Florida, the football team, that worries you, or is it more the history of going down there and that you haven't won since 03? Because I do look at this football team, and this Florida team's not very good. Now, that doesn't mean they can't win on Saturday, but they're not a very good team, I don't think. And I've watched a lot of Graham Mertz at his time in Wisconsin. He's not very good, and he wasn't very good against Utah. Now, they played McNeese State last week and whatever. But I just – like Tennessee, I still think, given all the concerns we've talked about, they are the better team in this game, and they should go down there and win.
I mean, over this time, it's 20 years since they won in the swamp. So you say, and I know like the Butch game in 15 and the fourth and forever. I mean, they've had some moments that are like, wow. I mean, in 17, you know, you could argue, I mean, they both weren't very good.
Yeah.
And they give up the sort of Hail Mary in the last play of the game. Unbelievable stuff has happened to them. But how many times have they been flat out the superior team and gone into that place and lost? I mean, you know, you go back to, like, Fulmer's teams, like, the 03 team that won down there, yeah, he had a better team. And Ron Zook coached Florida, and, like, okay, so, like, Florida was falling off as a program. How many times have they actually been flat out the better team and have lost in the swamp?
Not very often.
Because most of those years, then you get into dueling, but, you know, and Florida's better. So, I there's a stat, and I don't have it in front of me, but it's very rare that you have this situation with Tennessee – top 10 or whatever, top 15 even, and playing an unranked Florida team, and I think they don't lose that. Again, it's a rarity. Yeah, the history, what does the history mean? To me, the history, it's fans freak out about it. I get it, because you experienced it. But for these players, unless it's just talked about so much that it gets in their heads, I don't see how it's relevant.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Vols matchup against Florida in the swamp. We'll get back into Ryan Tannehill and the Titans coming up next as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Tune in to 1025, 1063, the game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week. Illinois taking on Penn State, presented by Superbook Sports and Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest non-conference games across the country. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. We'll have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up from 8 to 8:30. We'll get into all things NFL with him, so looking forward to that. Right now, looking ahead to Tennessee and Florida. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. And Joe, a big one for Joe Milton coming up on Saturday, and this is going to be something that probably is going to influence the way a lot of Tennessee fans view him starting on Saturday as conference play opens up. You're taking on your arch rival. Look, Tennessee's the favorite in this game. Tennessee snapped a long losing streak to Florida last year. They have not had success against the Gators over the last 20 years. It's been 20 years since they've gone down to the swamp and have won down there. So I know that Tennessee is favored in this game. There is some apprehension from the fan base that I think we've detected this week. And, you know, even if they go and win on Saturday, I think it's going to be a big game for Tennessee fans. It certainly has not become old hat beating Florida yet, even though they did snap the losing streak last year at home.
Yeah, you got a chance two straight against Florida, which I think has happened one time since 1971.
Yep.
So, since 1971,
I believe it was 03-04.
Yeah, it was 03-04.
Yep.
There has been one winning streak against Florida. It was an 03-04. So I missed this, but Kyle Tucker texted it to me. He actually wrote a piece ranking the new quarterbacks in the SEC, and Milton ranks well, but he's one of nine passing So, the overall stats are fine, but this stat, 1 of 9 passing when pressured and 3 of 13 on passes that travel 15-plus yards in the air.
Yep.
That's worst in the SEC in both of those categories.
Yep.
And that adds up with what, if you've watched closely, if a Tennessee fan has watched them 2 games, that adds up. I mean, it's, he's tight windows or pressure have not been good for him. And the thing is, he's played catch a lot better than he did last game. I mean, right? And that's what he's got to get back to.
Yep.
In this offense, you can play some catch. You're going to,
need your receivers to catch it, and you need to throw it well.
And look, I mean, he should connect. I think he's worked well on the deep ball and has a lot more air under it. I think it's absolutely gotten better, but you got to connect on some of those.
No question about it.
Take some shots and connect on them. But right now, not pretty, really.
Michael on the text line says, it's history 100%. We're the clear better team, but history tells us we find a way to lose this game. I got another text that says, Florida may not be very good, but with that performance against a less talented Austin Peay team at home, it gives us all the reason to be concerned. Another text says, Tennessee by 24 this weekend. Trust me, Milton's not Hendon Hooker, but he will hit some deep shots for a couple of touchdowns. Running backs will get 2 or 3 touchdowns, and Milton will get one on a quarterback sneak. 38-14, Vols win, and they break the swamp curse.
That's a lot of confidence. I still think I think they win by like 10. That's my feeling right now. I think that it's a close game most of the night, and they tack one on. But
it's a huge game for Billy Napier too, right? I mean, recruiting is going really well for him, and I think last time I checked, they were number 3 in recruiting for next year. So that's what you hang your hat on right now if you're Billy Napier. But I mean, the Utah game was ugly. They get the win against McNeese State last week, but nobody in Florida cares about beating McNeese State. Like, he needs a signature win that he's not really gotten as of yet, and this is a big game for him. I don't, it's Florida and it's the SEC, so you can never be 100% certain of saying, like, somebody's job's not in jeopardy, because I do think the recruiting is going well enough where it's easy for him to point and say, I mean, look at this. We're going to be fine as you move forward here. But on the field, it's not been very pretty for Billy Napier so far.
It's big to not get smoked. I mean, not that people will be happy if they lose a competitive game, but if they lose a competitive game, you can also say, hey, last year, went in there and look at the final score, even though really they got blown out.
Yep.
You get blown out in this game, and yeah, the noise gets louder. But he, like he said, I mean, he's going to be pointing to that, and I think that's going to keep him okay. I mean, it's year 2.
I know. It's
this freaking league.
It's,
man.
Florida. It's the SEC.
Yeah,
I know.
I know.
Derek Nolansville on the text line says, besides playing well in a bowl game versus an uninspired Clemson team, why would you have any belief that Milton will play well this season? There's 5 years to prove you wrong. That's from Derek from Nolansville on the text line.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's not accurate, I'm not saying that I'm confident that he's going to be great, but there's not 5 years of bad performance to prove you wrong. I mean, Joe Milton played.
He didn't play hardly the last 2 years. So
right. He played in 2020 in the opener for Michigan and was incredible at Minnesota. I mean, it's Minnesota, row the boat, whatever you think of it. He was incredible. He broke his thumb in the second or third play of the next week against Michigan State, played bad in that game. They lost, but he was hurt, and then he lost his job to Cade McNamara. But then, he comes in here, and he beat out Hendon Hooker flat out. I mean, he beat out Hendon Hooker in camp. I think Joe Milton was bad. It was just that pick game. You're just like, man, the overthrow. He also threw the greatest deep ball ever in that game.
He did.
You remember that? Was that Hyatt? And
he dropped it
or something in the end zone?
Yeah.
And so then he hasn't played. And so what football have we seen from him? We've seen one great game against Minnesota, not very good. Again, going back to 2020 in Michigan, there's a totally different offense. There's a bunch of years of work. And then he was really good. He was good against Clemson. That Clemson performance, if you can do that, it wasn't consistent, but overall, those red zone throws in that game were NFL red zone touchdown passes. I mean, that's what they were. So, like, an uninspired Clemson team, okay, those guys didn't come out and quit. I mean, you can spin it if you want, but the reality is there's still limited information on this guy. So far this year, especially last week, it wasn't good. But You know, this idea that it's like we have all this data that says he's terrible and we're just ignoring it is not accurate.
It's not accurate. Now, having said all that, that's why this game is so intriguing, beyond the obvious of the rivalry and all that. But I do think there's a lot on the line for him because you do have the five-star freshman right behind him. And the fan base, I mean, look, there are already some in the fan base that want to make the switch to Nico. Look, there were some in the fan base that wanted Nico to start from the beginning. So we knew that was going to be the case heading into the year. But if he comes out there, and let's say Tennessee wins, but they win because their defense plays great and they win 24-17 on Saturday night and Milton and the passing offense don't look great, there are still going to be fans like, guys, you got to make the switch. Like, you got to switch it to the freshman. Now, at the end of the day, the only thing that really matters is what Josh Heupel thinks about the quarterback situation. But to your point, I do think, like, if you're Heupel, there's probably a little bit of nervousness about where you're at right now offensively. And I think what you talked about in the Austin Peay game signals that a little bit. I mean, he's ultra-aggressive, Heupel is, offensively. Fourth down, he'll go for it on his own 40. He doesn't care. When they didn't go for that fourth down last week when it was like fourth and six against Austin Peay, I was like, geez, he has no confidence that they can pick this up. And that's an interesting spot for them to be in. And I do think there's a lot on the line for Milton in this game. He's got to play well.
No, I agree, and that's the huge question is, you know, what does Heupel think? Heupel sees it every day.
Yep.
He's with him every day. He's expressed nothing but confidence in him. It's his team. He's the leader, all these things. So, I mean, there's a lot invested in Joe Milton, including Heupel going out to get him, to bring him to Knoxville.
Yep.
After Heupel went out and recruited him as hard as you can recruit someone and lost in Michigan when Milton was in high school. So, I mean, he's believed in him for a long time. But, yeah, look, if it goes bad and then he loses his confidence, and the negativity around it, you say what you want, but you can't ignore it and you can't think it has no impact because it impacts the whole team if the fan base turns on a quarterback. And so
yep.
That's something that you have to be concerned about too. It's a huge game on that front.
This is also a game where he needs really all three of them, but especially, I mean, somebody in that starting receiver trio has got to step up a little bit. Like, Brew McCoy, I think, has been fine so far. He's not been some game-changing player. That needs to improve. But really, Keaton and White have got to be better than they've been. Like, White's been okay so far. Ramel Keaton, I don't think, has been very good. Those two have got to get better. And if those two get better, and they get on the same page with the quarterback and they catch the ball when it's thrown to them. And, you know, Thornton, bad drop last week, and then basically he was a non-factor in the game after that. What does that look like this week? This is a big – his receivers need to pick him up. You know, it can't just be Milton missing passes here, and then when he hits them, the receivers drop it. When it makes some contested catches, like makes some difficult catches. There were a couple last week, Joe, where it wasn't perfect on the money, had to reach back a little bit. And you couldn't come down with it. You got to come down with some of those passes if you're a receiver too.
Yeah, no, those guys have been underwhelming. Squirrel White, I mean, he had a couple plays last game. He's had a couple plays in both games where you're like, yep. But, you know, you want to see more of it.
Yeah.
All of it, the thing is too, it's like if you get on a roll and keep the ball offensively and have more snaps and have more completions, then,
yeah.
then I think you get everybody rolling. But you have to do that. And right now, it was just totally stuck in neutral for so much of a game against Austin Peay.
I know.
Which is shocking, but that's what happened.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We will do that next. Charles Robinson from 8 to 8:30. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Guys, I just want to move on to San Diego. I'm not going to answer any more questions about what happened Sunday. What happened Sunday happened. I'm not happy about it. No one in this building's happy about it. But at the end of the day, it's over. We can learn from it. We can move on. And if you have any questions about LA, I'm more than happy to answer.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Ryan Tannehill had enough of the line of questioning yesterday about the New Orleans game.
Now here's my rant. It's L.A., not San Diego, and you suck! No, I'm just kidding. answer the question. Take responsibility.
Be more like Josh Allen.
Exactly. Now, I want to talk about Ryan Tannehill today with one of my favorite themes, which is that two things can be true.
Okay.
One thing, which is true, which you have to do incredible mental pretzelry to not get, is that he was awful against the Saints, and he's why they lost.
Mental pretzelry.
Yes,
I enjoy
thank
that.
You. It's like demonry, but pretzelry. Ryan Tannehill was, you as an NFL quarterback in this league, you have precious few opportunities to have easy touchdowns. You have to take care of the football, and he was bad, and he's why they lost, and that's it.
Yes.
It's very easy and clear, and trying to do anything else with it is, again, you just stop it. And I'm not speaking to anybody in particular, but you know, just stop it.
That's right.
Also, do we need to trace Ryan Tannehill? We've had it again on the text line today. It's like this, you know, Arthur Smith, okay, yep. A.J. Brown, yep. And I mentioned to somebody, let's also remember that the back half of 2019, Nate Davis, the rookie, starts to really come on. Jack Conklin playing at a high level. Sorry. He's from San Diego.
Shout out to Jack.
Yeah. And
feel bad for you.
Do feel bad for Jack Conklin. Taylor Lewan gets on a roll. Ben Jones still keeping it together, much healthier back then. Who am I forgetting? Oh, yeah, and new acquisition, Roger Saffold,
yep,
getting on a roll. I think that was the best offensive line in the NFL, or, you know, top 2-3. The back half of 2019 into the playoffs. Derrick Henry dominated the playoffs, but that offensive line was great. Derrick Henry was at his peak of his powers. A.J. Brown, Jonnu Smith, Arthur Smith, all these things. And they all deserve credit, in part, for how well Tannehill played. Tannehill played at a Pro Bowl, All-Pro level. That was 2019, 2020. Even after Lewan tore his ACL in 2020, it was still excellent offensive line play, or very good. It was, again, to me, right at the top of the league before Lewan got hurt in 2020. So you trade A.J. Brown, and you lose these other guys, and you can say whatever you want about Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, but you know, those guys were very productive. You draft Dylan Raidens. You draft Isaiah Wilson. You draft Caleb Farley. You draft Malik Willis in the third round. There's a player who could be helping Ryan Tannehill right now. You draft Will Levis in the second round. There's a player who could be helping Ryan Tannehill. It's all gone very bad around him, okay? And so that's just the reality. Has he regressed? Has he eroded some now that he's 35 years old? I think that's very possible. I don't think he's eroded to the point of what we saw Sunday. I think that's going to be an aberration. Well, yeah, if not, then fine. Then we can – then Junie, start talking about Will Levis playing. Great. Right. Then it's actually sane to say that. But right now, Tannehill was awful in one game, and a lot of the big picture around Tannehill is not his fault, and those are two separate things, and they're both true.
I agree, and I expect – we talked about this. I expect him to come back to more like Ryan Tannehill next week, which, again, he's not great. It's not bad. He's a good player when he's on his game. The thing that I think has changed on this even more so – and it's been the case to some degree with some people going back to 2019. And remember the big discussion after 2019 of – should they sign Tannehill back, or should they put their hat in the mix for Brady, yep, and all that stuff? Yep. And then Tannehill plays great in 2020 again, and then the Cincinnati game's kind of where things turned. But I think if you watched him play last year, given what was going on around him, I thought he was good last year. He wasn't great, but he was good last year, and then he was playing on one foot for the rest of the season. Now what's happened is he's 35 years old. They've drafted two quarterbacks in the last 2 years, like you just laid out. A lot of people are ready to move on and see if you can get to that elite quarterback play. And then he comes out and has an absolute stinker like he did on Sunday. And I said it earlier, and I fully believe it. Like, he is more in the crosshairs right now heading into this game on Sunday with his fan base than he's ever been before. Well, I shouldn't say that. After the Cincinnati game, it's going to be hard to top. But it's eerily similar to me this week. How similar the reaction is from some Titans. There are Titans fans that are irate with Ryan Tannehill heading into this game.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but the Cincinnati game, then that whole offseason, right? The whole offseason is, you know, what can they do? Can they get Aaron Rodgers? Can they do, you know, can they upgrade? All that stuff. And so his first time, I think we talked about this before the Giants game. So his first time playing football was that Giants game.
Yep.
And the thing is, I mean, he was good. He came out and he was good. And so you didn't have the negative fan reaction. I think Sunday, it may not take long at all.
Yeah.
For there to be some boos at his expense. And, yeah, that's the reality of – I mean, I can't blame anybody. There are some fans who have just been totally out on him for a long time. I think that they're wrong. I think last year he made a little bit of chicken salad out of a fair amount of chicken bleep.
Yeah.
You know, given what was around him. But at the same time, if you're a Titans fan who's sick of being pretty good and not scoring 20 points in games – and then you just came off this performance from Ryan Tannehill, I understand why you're fed up.
I don't blame Titans fans for being frustrated heading into this. I mean, they haven't scored a touchdown so far this year. You had five field goals that you had the pleasure of watching the other day. And going back to your point, you know, Karski talked about yesterday the carryover of the eight-game losing streak not mattering, and the team, you know, obviously it's a different team. There is a 45% roster turnover. So all that I think is totally legitimate. Let me tell you what it does matter to, the fans. Like, the fans absolutely care about that. It's been eight games since they've won a football game, and over that period of time, as you've laid out this week, the offense has been absolutely atrocious. So the Titans fans, I think, are beyond frustrated with what they've seen on the offensive side of the football. I don't blame them heading into this game.
Yeah, I mean, this was always almost for sure going to be the last run. Getting back together one more time. Well, you know, I separate Tannehill and Henry in that way, but it very well may be for both of them. I think it's, you know, especially after last week, more likely that it is for Tannehill.
Yep.
So it's fascinating to see how it will turn out. I think for his sake, like maybe the bubble screen for the Titans might be a good idea. Like, get, you know,
well, just do it to Burks. Get Burks involved early.
There you go.
Yep.
Bubbles to
Burks.
Two
birds, one stone.
Bubbles to Burks. Get some short completions going. Get a little confidence. Get a couple first downs. You know, get people off your back, because I think some people are going to be poised to.
Oh, I agree.
Boo.
But you know what? The injury report, if I'm a Titans fan, scares the crap out of me yesterday, because DeAndre Hopkins is on it, didn't practice. Like, what if he can't go Sunday? I have no idea. I mean, he could be out there today and practice and everything looks fine, but what if he can't play Sunday? What's that passing game going to look like?
Well, then you have to – basically what you did with him against the Saints, that has to be Treylon Burks.
I agree.
And whatever the trust level – I don't know if it's a low trust level or not. I just know he didn't throw at him much. But either way, you have to go to Treylon Burks. And then, you know, you plug in NWI, you're fine.
Yeah, you'd be good. And then you just look at Karski in the press box and be like, you see that? Look at him out there. Make a plays left and right.
I don't like that touchdown. Someone else should have caught that touchdown. That touchdown doesn't count. It's NWI.
6-1. By the way, Rob says, Rayson McMath hasn't played once in the last eight games.
Well, you know what?
Rob has found the problem.
Coincidence? I think he actually has played during
the
stretch.
Yeah, I think he's right, too.
6-1-5.
I still like the text.
737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from 8 to 8:30. We'll get into all things NFL with him. Looking ahead to week two of the season. That is next. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is the legendary Elliston Place Soda Shop. Elliston Place Soda Shop is one part soda shop, one part meat and three, one part old school diner that has been serving Nashville since 1939. Get half off a $20 gift card to Elliston Place Soda Shop now at thegamenashville.com while they last. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details.